Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar. And on Twitter at CFLAR Big Cats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve.
Last week, we began our discussion on animals in captivity, the challenges, conundrums, and dilemmas that are associated with this practice. Before we continue with the discussion, a word of update regarding our tigress, Wowichula. As we mentioned last week's show, Wowichula had a mammary tumor that was removed, and that mammary tumor did come back testing positive for malignancy. Now, just because this is a cancerous tumor does not mean that all is lost. We are happy to also report that she is in good spirits and all of her blood work did come back normally. So it is our hope that we got to this tumor in time, but only watchful waiting and time will tell. We'll keep you updated if anything new develops there. For now, we're going to go back to our previous conversation regarding animals in captivity and what that means for us as a species.
For educational purposes alone, it's a huge benefit to have animals in captivity. It is much easier to show a person the animal and say, this is what we're trying to preserve over in India. This is what we're trying to preserve in these other areas of the world that we don't have here. And to show them and let them see the majesty of these creatures and what they are and how beautiful they are. It's a big part of how you literally raise money to preserve them in the wild. If we didn't have the animals in captivity, if there was no education like that, I think it would be much more difficult to raise money to preserve them in the wild, in which case you'd lose them in both places.
I was talking with someone about the changes in the modern world in terms of how fast communication has gone and what these changes are going to mean for our current generations. And because so much data is available so freely these days, it becomes a lot more challenging for people to sift through when anybody has the chance to upload any kind of data. Amongst tigers alone, there's tremendous amounts of misinformation and myths and things that are out there as fact that we really don't know as fact. And that creates a unique challenge that requires experimentation of the observational variety.
Well, and you're talking about the actual research on the cats themselves, behavior and such?
It's in part research, but it's also in part just exposure. Something as simple as our facts. You know, we talk, of course, about these various cat facts, but talking about cat facts is very similar to trying to give facts about humans as a species. You know, how fast do we run? Well, it depends on what shape you're in and you know, what you've done.
Sure.
And things like that. But for some reason, if you said the same thing about a person, people would obviously say, well, you know, that's not me, or I could do better than that, or that sounds about right. However, when we say that about a cat, then it becomes a fact. Someone looks at a cat and says, that's all cats. All of them are going to do something like that. And we have to begin to develop a more nuanced and more mature way of discussing animal situations rather than just it's evil for them to be in captivity and all humans bad, or you know, we're the dominant species, we can do whatever we want. It's far more nuanced than that.
Well, absolutely.
But the debate always seems to boil down to just those two sides.
But it's coming down to the point where if they were not in captivity, at least certain of these animals that are in high endangered states, if they were not in captivity, they would be extinct if they're not already extinct, they would be extinct soon. There's a lot of advantages to having animals in captivity. As I mentioned before, just the ideal idea of being able to raise awareness so that funding can be obtained and so that awareness is there for the idea of conserving the natural lands of these animals. Because clearly, saving the animal means saving the natural lands of them as well, which of course is good for us in many ways, thinking of all the different plants and animals that can benefit from having some wild acreage that's still left natural. But the other part of that is that the animals that are in captivity, that are in zoos and being bred in zoos, are being bred in a fashion to be mindful of genetics. When you get to the point where there's only a certain number of tigers left in the world, there's going to be some inbreeding and you're going to lose some genetic material because of it.
This is true. And the genetics argument is one that has often been used by zoos and other breeding organizations to rule in or rule out various types of cats for these sorts of programs. And when you look at it from a very high level, you can see where we have occasionally messed that process up as well.
Yeah, we manage to do that from time to time.
We do. And the concept of doing it via genetic choice and trying to genetically make sure that they are bred appropriately is a valid idea. However, it's a known fact that some of those genetic pools have been messed up by introducing animals that were not part of the survival programs into them. We know that even in wild populations, when we attempted to introduce the Texan cougar to the Florida panther so that we could build up their size and strength, that we were diluting genetic material at that point.
Yeah, the question is then, do you really have a Florida panther, or do you have something else that's a breed between the Florida panther and the Texas cougar?
Well, my argument would be that that's a human game to try and figure out whether or not the DNA is exactly the same as it was before. And it's a fool's errand. Over the course of time, animals are going to change based upon their environment. Without getting into the debate of evolution, it is very clear that over time, certain facets are going to be bred into these various animals based upon their environments. And like it or not, we are now, as humans, the major determinants for some of these environments.
Well, part of that, though, is you say evolution. Evolution happens over millions of years. Adaptation happens over a shorter span of time. But the point is that these animals, we're changing their environment too fast for them to evolve to change. They have to adapt as best they can, but there's only so much adaptation that can happen in a short span of time, which is what ultimately leads to their extinction.
We are the major determinant of that adaptation when we decide we're going to take animals from one place and transplant them to another. We are accelerating the time frame and altering that time frame. And it's not necessarily evolution, so to speak, but it certainly is introducing the elements that are going to alter the course of that species' natural history.
If not their existence.
If not their existence.
Thanks for listening to CIFAR Sounding. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, my name is Phyllis Park. I am the events coordinator for Central Florida Animal Reserve. Here are some of the events that we have coming up. Birthday, presented by WJRR. It's a rock music festival on April 12th. This is a Saturday. Gates opening at 11 a.m. at the Central Florida Fairgrounds. The event runs until around 11 p.m., but CIFAR staff will be there until around dark. We will be selling CIFAR merchandise and promoting our organization, soliciting new volunteers for our organization, since this will be fairly close to our new home. Sebastian will be there, meeting old friends and making new friends. The next event that's coming up will be our Member Appreciation Day on May 18th, which is a Sunday from 12 until 5 p.m. This is an opportunity to meet the CIFAR staff, see the cats in their home, to ask all of your questions and see what's going on with our future as well as with the cats. We hope to see you at this upcoming event. Come out and see us. Thank you for supporting CIFAR.
Thanks, Phyllis. Enjoy this musical interlude. CIFAR Sounding will be right back. And we're back. You're listening to CIFAR Sounding with host Simba Wiltz and Asla Konser.
So it still leaves us with that question, though. The part of that being that, yes, is it humane to put animals in captivity? Well, I'm guessing that if you look at it simply from the preservation of their existence, that there has to be some thought that, yes, that is a humane thing to do.
Well, there's two different questions there. The is it humane versus is it even necessary? You know, is it humane for us to take our own species and to make them work in a cubicle when, you know, they've got
our own captivity.
Our own captivity, where we have people that we have come to a place and we put them in a 4x4 space and we give them a phone device or something, and we tell them that you need to make a certain number of calls or you need to do a certain number of tasks over and over again, or else you don't get fed, so to speak, i.e. we don't get paid, and do that to people for 40 hours a week. Is that humane? I think that it's an unfair question to ask, because people are, of course, are making the choice to do this to a certain degree, whereas animals may not be making the choice to be in captivity. But when there is no alternative, nature has always chosen to find a way. And in this manner, people are the vector in which nature is working through to find a way to keep these species around.
I see what you're saying in that point. Yes, we're making the decision to do something to try to keep them around. And if that means putting them in captivity so that others can be aware of that and help us fund the efforts to conserve them, then that is part of it, absolutely. Would I like to see all the animals back in the wild? Sure I would, but it's not possible in the sense that there isn't enough wild left for them to be in.
And anything that is considered wild, eventually, if any animal walks far enough, it's going to run into a fence or into some barrier whereby it's no longer safe.
And that's a whole other issue as well, is the interaction with animals and people, which has led to a lot of the issues to begin with. Obviously, animals can be scary. Big wild animals can be scary, and their interactions with people can be deadly. But there are still, we're far more deadly to them than they are to us.
Yes, as was pointed out by a number of conservationists, we are the only species that doesn't generally directly assault an animal. We will also assault its environment, we'll assault its food sources, we'll assault everything that is around them to make it impossible for them to stay where they are.
Or to continue living at all.
Exactly.
So it is a sad state, because it's getting to the point where if something's not done, it will come to the point where there are going to be animals that only exist in zoos. That may be the case for certain species now. I'm not aware of any off the top of my head. But we may be getting to that point where certain animals are only going to exist in zoos because their natural habitats are simply gone.
Yes. And, you know, we've kind of argued on the side of, you know, captivity is a necessary evil, so to speak. It's a necessary component of having animals around in the world, because we do like them. We do have this connection and this need to connect with wildlife.
Well, that's the other side of the argument. What happens if, and this is the whole cycle of life discussion. If we were to let the Sumatran tiger go extinct, it doesn't change our lives here in the U.S. because we're not directly impacted by what they do. But when you come down to it, it's that because they've gone extinct, that's an indicator that something else is missing. It's not just the tiger is gone. Their environment is gone. And that could be acres and acres of trees and plants and other animals that live in that environment that are also gone because the Sumatran tiger isn't there anymore. The other part of that is all those plants and animals, there are many, many species in the rainforest that we have yet to document. We don't even know they exist. Many of our medicines rely on finding new kinds of plants and different things in the wild that we end up using as medicine to help us, ourselves. So there is a direct benefit to us to having conserved lands and not having these lands go extinct. There are things out there that we might find if we have the time to actually locate them document them and see if there's any benefits to us as humans. Now, of course, that's kind of a selfish view of it. Obviously, I would like to preserve these lands for the sake of having them. But if you are looking at it from a selfish perspective to say that, well, why do I care if the tiger goes extinct? It's because it's not just the tiger going extinct. It's all the things that depend on what, it's an indicator of all the ecological systems that went away, which caused the tiger to go extinct.
Trying to answer that question of why tigers is, that is the key question behind both conservation as well as behind everything that we are trying to promote. It would be nice to have a compelling reason for everybody to want to save the tigers. And when I say everybody, I'm talking about it doesn't matter whether you are the richest man on the planet or whether you are the poorest or what country you live in. Basically, something that is so compelling that it eliminates and cuts through all of the strata that we as society put up. And that just does not seem to exist. Just like animals mean different things to different people, there are different messages that different people get in the process of trying to work with and work around the issues of conservation.
And of course, as I brought up before, the why does it matter to me? Why tiger, as you just said? You know, you could look at it from a selfish perspective and say, okay, if the tiger's gone, maybe it won't matter. But it won't be just the tiger. That's the point. There's more to it than that. And that's what we have to be careful of, is making sure that it isn't so much more to it that it's something that's going to be detrimental in a much broader sense than just losing the tiger.
All of this discussion, as well as so many of the issues that we have brought up in the course of our talk today, really has a lot to do with the purpose of CIFAR as a platform. We are really looking to become more than just a home for big cats. In many ways, we're also a laboratory. We are having to adapt in the same way that cats are having to adapt in the wild, because we have to adapt to the needs of the big cats as their situation changes. And it involves all the aspects that have been talked about. If the situations in the wilds become more favorable for the cats, then we need to be figuring out how to get cats back there. If the situation in the wild deteriorates to the point where it's going to be the only option, then we need to find ways to make sure that they are going to be taken care of in the best possible way that we can.
That's a good point. And of course, that adaptability is part of our mission as well. It's interesting to note that CIFAR is, of course, adapting day to day just to the needs of our individuals that are part of the facility. But in an overall sense, what you're talking about is a broader adaptability to what's happening in the world in general, with the environments, with whether there are going to be preserves made for these animals to live in the wild again, or whether we're going to lose them completely. But it's also a laboratory in the sense that we don't know all that we need to know about the behavior of these animals. Some of that can be learned from what we're doing at CIFAR.
It can, and we are obligated to make sure that we don't approach it in a dogmatic, rigid fashion. It has to be dynamic. It has to be clinical. It has to be a manner that is going to incorporate as many aspects as we possibly can to get all of the elements correct. And it's not just one person. And that's why it's not just one thought. That's part of dichotomy that we live in and that we live with, feeling both this incredible sense that we need to do everything we can to preserve and save the cats that we have, while knowing that we will potentially never be as good as perhaps the natural environment might have been.
That's a good point. And it goes back to kind of our mottos: compassion, conservation, and commitment. We have the compassion for the animals, and we do feel for them, and we would like to see them in the wild because that's where they would be the happiest. But we do try to make their home here as happy as we can for them. And of course, the conservation aspect of that is that whole, is there going to be wild available for them to go back to or to be in if they're already in the wild? And of course, the commitment is just the daily work that all the volunteers at CIFAR do to make it so that these animals do have a place to be and do have a happy home.
We're bounded by a lot of forces that we can't really see with regards to this, whether it be financial or social or even just in terms of pure personnel, people resources. We do the best that we can with what we have, which is what everybody does. Even the most highly funded conservation group is only doing the best that it can with the resources that it has.
Well, that's true of anybody in any endeavor. You do the best you can with the resources you have, and you hope that the results are going to be positive.
Exactly. And we try to make sure that just as we are trying to make a world for the cats in ways that perhaps they can't understand, we hope that there will be influences and others that are working on our behalf as well to try and help us get to where we need to go, even though we sometimes can't see those forces.
Clearly, that's reaching out to all of you as the public, because we do need your help with these efforts for conservation and for taking care of the animals at CIFAR and to make sure that we do have a happy home for these guys. But also, it is a call for you to look at what is out there. Be more aware of what's happening. Be more aware of the endangered species and what's going on with them, and the fact that their habitats are being destroyed. There's a lot of different reasons why that's happening. And it comes back to that whole, when I first started the discussion about debate.org, 50% of the people are for animals in captivity and 50% of the people are against it. It is a dichotomy because it's difficult. With compassion for the animals, you say, well, it's best for them to be in the wild. Well, that's true, but if there isn't a wild for them to be in, then that's a difficult thing to say.
That's true. I wish that we had the answer, but unfortunately, that's something that we can only wish for and hope that over time, the answer will reveal itself to us and we'll better understand the kind of cage that we are all in with regards to this.
Didn't you write a poem that kind of illustrates this dichotomy between the cage and what it's like to be in and out of the cage?
I did, and it was something that was written early on when I started working around big cats in captivity, and it really does continue to illustrate that dichotomy between the two sides.
Well, I think it might be a fitting ending if you were to actually recite that poem for us today to end the show.
All right. This is The Untitled Cage. A touch of danger, a dash of fear, the sweet cocktail I taste as you draw near. Between velvet paws with razor claws, I rest my arm and shed a tear. Such beauty does not belong here. You should be free to run and play, lounging the day away beneath jungle trees that swing and sway. Not captive-born, as you are today. In spirit, we are both the same, a smoldering heart and not quite tame, fettered by chains that make us lame compared to the greatness we were designed to claim. Though I know the purpose of this harsh chain link, its visage alone leads me to think of another, perhaps one who watches me from outside this cage I cannot see, and keeps me here protectively, shielded from infinity. Does the Creator know my danger in a world too complex for me to understand, too perilous to defend against, too unprepared to hear the truth I bring? I feel your tongue, though rough and thick, place on my hand a gentle lick. a kiss, a gift to that arm reaching through from this complex world and out to you. Your large, wild eyes watch me cry, not openly, but deep inside, mourning a life of power denied, yours, mine, and for us both, I sigh. All I ask is to know what's true, to see the cage that holds me as this one holds you.
CFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wiltz. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding. And now one final thought before we sign off from this week's show. We also had the stunning news this week that a zoo in Copenhagen that had gained infamy for killing a healthy giraffe and feeding it to a family of lions has now killed a family of four lions on the pretense that they need to make room for another single lion coming to their zoo. At first, I had no words. Then they came spewing out like a torrent. And perhaps it would be best if I laid it out in perspective. I spent over a decade working around big cats, lions, tigers, leopards, and cougars. I fed them bottles, held them when they cried, rocked them to sleep, and woke up with their paws on my body. At first, I thought I was learning about big cats. But now what I understand is that my real lesson was responsibility. When we take it upon ourselves to place creatures in a captive situation, we take upon ourselves the most solemn responsibility that nature can bestow upon us, to become agents of synergy that create habitats, environments, and lives for our charges. With that responsibility comes a great power, a power over life and death. Now, I've listened as organizations like CFAR have been talked down to, told that we're somehow lesser, that somehow our animals are garbage because they don't hold to some preconceived scientific notion. And I've listened to tales of others being denigrated because we choose to take people who care versus people who want a job. I've watched them tout accreditations and procedures and policies as a lever to say that what we do is unprofessional, when it often is just a shield to hide behind when they need to make business decisions. Now, I'm a scientist by training, and I'll be the first to say that when science is used as a justification for abdicating our fundamental responsibility to care for our residents, then that is neither rational nor scientific. It is purely an error in thought. Our team at CFAR came in and took on a failed effort. This year, we're stable for the fifth year running and building larger and better homes for our residents. And though it threatened to bankrupt us all, we didn't euthanize a single animal on the basis that it was too hard. So I don't want to hear we couldn't find a way. I don't want to hear we had to do it because we needed to make room for another animal. And most of all, I don't want to hear another thing about how not being part of that particular club makes an organization lesser. Because for all the endowments, all the research money, and all the revenue generated from public access, what good is it if the core of what you're doing is for nothing but genetic material to be slaughtered and squandered because you couldn't use those resources appropriately to find an answer? We need animals in captivity because people love wildlife, but the relationships that we build with them through time, sweat, and suffering must never be denigrated to the level of refuse. We will never be as strong as an elephant, as fast as a cheetah, as swift as a hawk, or swim like a dolphin. Our only natural advantage as humans, the one that has allowed our species to rise to its dominance, is thought. And thought is the one thing that society is trying desperately to suppress. Actions such as this are anathema to all individuals that can think. For shame that this zoo chose to abdicate this natural advantage at the cost of these lions' lives.